evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I am the managing editor of ReaderViews in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's August 23rd, 2007, and welcome to episode number 38 in our series. Tonight's topic is Illustrations That Sell the Book, and our special guests will be joining us this hour is Lee Foti from LeeFoti.com. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is AuthorsAccess.com. Now, tonight we're on the line with Lee Edward Foti. He has been writing and illustrating stories about magic, monsters, and mystery for as long as he can remember. Growing up on a farm, he was subjected to horrible chores, such as cleaning the chicken coop, and was often in trouble for his constant daydreaming. There was a time when his father harbored hopes that his son would take over the family business, but these aspirations came to an abrupt end when the young author accidentally ran the tractor over the outhouse. Fortunately, no one was injured. As a result, Foti went on to pursue his love of art, mythology, and storytelling, all of which luckily do not require any skill in operating heavy machinery. Foti is the author and illustrator of The Chronicles of Kendra Candlestar, and has also illustrated numerous picture books for other authors, including the Canadian national bestseller, The Chocolatier's Apprentice. His latest book, Kendra Candlestar and The Door to Unger, will be released in October 2007. Foti is an engaging public speaker, specializing in presentations and workshops for elementary-age children. In addition, he is co-founder of Dream Workshop, a program in which children's authors, artists, and performers help kids publish their very own books. Wow, that's cool. Foti is fond of his students, who have invented several nicknames for him, including The Wizard of Words and Mr. Evil Wiz. It goes without saying that he likes the last one the best. And now we're going to speak with this night's guest, Lee Foti. Good evening to you, Lee.
Good evening.
Lee, you've been an illustrator for a long, long time. And illustrations, of course, are extremely important in young children's books, and that's what I'd like to talk to you about tonight. So let's just go into that, and let's talk about the importance of illustrations in children's books.
Okay.
And I'd like to hear your feedback on the importance.
Well, I obviously think they're absolutely crucial. I'm obviously a very visual person, being an illustrator, but I'm also a writer, so I think I bring to the equation these two sides of my brain, the writing side and the illustration side. Now, I do illustrate books for other authors, but I find it impossible to write my own book without also illustrating it. I don't know what that says about me as a writer, but if I'm going to create a story, I find that it's really hard for me to bring it to life unless I'm also doing illustrations. So I just think, especially today, more than ever, we live in a really visual society. And I guess I just loved books as a kid that had lots of illustrations. So when I write my own books, even though they're chapter books for older kids, I put in lots of illustrations, and I think they just help to enrich the story and to help invite readers into them. Now, certainly with picture books for younger kids, obviously the pictures are so important. They're even more so than chapter books. Those are the elements that are going to invite the kids into the story, and really a picture book obviously can't be a picture book unless it has these great illustrations.
So do you feel that illustrations are more attractive to the kids rather than actual photographs?
I certainly do think that because, you know, we've gotten to a stage with computers and digital cameras and all of these sorts of new technologies where I think photographs, you know, I guess art has become more unique. It's become more rare. Everyone sees photographs. I mean, the youngest kid now knows how to use a digital camera. And the first thing, if you've ever been with a kid and taken a picture of them, the first thing they want to do is look at it on the screen of the camera to see what it looks like. We have this instant gratification, right? Yeah. Obviously, you can't produce a piece of art that quickly. It's become a little bit more rare. It has become a little bit more unique. And as such, I think it's just that much more magical. And there's that element of interpretation. So when someone asks me to illustrate a book for them, I have to interpret their words. And I have to run that through the filter that is Lee Edward Foti's brain, and it has to come out with my artistic interpretation of their story. Now, obviously, if someone else illustrates the story, it's going to be different. And that is kind of magical. I mean, you know, I can pass over my digital camera to you, and you can take exactly the same photo. But we can't do that with art. And I think art has just become that much more, you know, there's a certain integrity to it. I think it's just become that much more inviting, that much more, you know, I keep saying the word magical, but I really believe in that word. I think it does become a little bit more magical.
And also, I think that one time I heard you say that a picture is worth 42,000 words.
Yes, I have said that. That's
and,
for me.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, for the book that I wrote, the first book in my Kendra Candlestar series, which was called Kendra Candlestar and the Box of Whispers, that book actually began with a painting. So I like to call that book my happy accident because I wasn't intending to write a book. I was just painting a picture one day. And when I was done the picture, I sat back and looked at it and realized that there was a story going on in this painting. And I didn't even really know what that story was, even though I was its creator. And so I just started jotting down a few notes and letting a few ideas dance through my mind and see what I could come up with. And, you know, the next thing I knew, I had this 42,000-word book. So I find that really neat that my whole idea started with it, and that's what gave me the whole book. And now, of course, I've got a sequel to that book coming out. So now, really, one painting has given me two books. And I find that just such a fascinating process. You know, every author gets inspiration in a different way, but for me, it is so tied to the visual. It's so tied to artwork.
Well, I have to agree that, you know, the visual is so important because many of us, that's how we actually get it, is through seeing things. And it just, it really, I admire people that can, you know, draw or paint or do illustrations. And illustrations are just so neat because they reflect reality, but yet there can be kind of cartoonish. And so let's talk about that. You know, illustrations being cartoonish, and why are they?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on the subject matter. I mean, a lot of picture books these days have they're great with very beautiful artwork, and they're not always cartoonish, obviously. You know, every artist brings his or her own talents or his or her own interpretation to a piece of work. My specific style tends to lean towards the cartoonish. There's no two ways about that. Now, I find that that's just, you know, that's just my personality. I'm a little bit whimsical and somewhat fun. And the books that I loved when I was a kid, especially, were those turn-of-the-century books with the very kind of Art Deco, clean black and white line art. So I think that's just where I tend to gravitate towards when I'm illustrating something.
Yeah, Lee, I think the key is that any kind of departure from photographic reality really engages the imagination, and I think that's what the kids really like.
You know, it's funny because I've had comments about my artwork, especially the artwork I put in my chapter book. I find this a very interesting comment, but I'm often told that my illustrations are very simple, yet with a lot of detail. So, and I'm not sure what that means, but I tend to agree, because I do have a very, and I think that just goes to the fact that I do have a rather cartoonish style, but it's a very clean, I don't do a lot of cross-hatching or things like that in my artwork. They're generally fairly clean and graphic, if you get my meaning.
Yeah.
At the same time, there are lots of little details in the character portraits or in the background and things like that. And especially when you're doing fantasy, you know, I think that's a great opportunity for an illustrator to add their vision of that fantasy world through artwork. I mean, that's when you can, as you said, Irene, you can mirror the world, right? And you can run it through your own mirror and show the reader how you are interpreting this other world.
Cool. All right, let's suppose that I've just finished my children's story, and now I need to find an illustrator. How in the world would I find an illustrator that matches my temperament?
Well, you know, this may seem like an obvious question or a silly thing to propose, but you have to, in my mind, the very first thing you have to do is be really sure about what your temperament is.
Oh.
Because I think, you know, there's so many different directions you can take a story. Not only, like, you know, an author's probably gone through this, I'm going to call it agony, of deciding how to tell a story. Well, then you have to decide how to present that story visually. And you may find that there's an artist out there who's incredibly gifted or talented, and you may love his or her artwork, but it may not be the right artwork for your story.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's important to not lose sight of that. So, you know, I recently, last year, illustrated the book The Chocolatier's Apprentice, and that was a book that was perfectly suited for my style because it was about a young boy who dreamed of becoming a chocolatier. So he loved chocolate, and he eventually got a job in a chocolate factory, and it was a perfect fit for my talents because I could draw him with this cartoon sort of style and him with his big chocolatier's hat and surrounded by chocolate and making all these chocolate bunnies. And you know, it was a very fun and whimsical story. Fit my style perfectly. Fit my style perfectly. I'm not sure it would have fit someone who was more artistic in the sense of fine art, if you get my meaning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's lots of great artists out there, and we all have our particular style. And you just have to make sure what you envisage for your story and then go find that artist rather than looking at the artist and going, oh, that's so great. That artist has got a great talent. I think you would chase your tail. And
yeah.
You want to make sure you don't, you want to make sure you can see the forest for the trees, because I think it's sometimes very easy to just say, well, that person's a very good artist, so we'll use him or her. But they may not have the right style for your specific story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I'm completely naive about this business. Is most illustration done as work for hire, or is there a royalty split involved as well? And how does that work?
Well, the world is changing, obviously. I think traditionally what would happen is there would be a royalty split. The publisher generally hires the illustrator, or a publisher generally has a retinue of illustrators, not on staff, but in
sure.
their, on that they know and that they use. And so, for example, if you are publishing through a traditional publisher, they would look at your story and they would match your, and if they chose to publish your story, they would match it with the illustrator that they felt best suited your project. Now, I said the world's changing because I've done a lot of contracts where I've actually been hired either by the author or by, well, I'm just thinking of The Chocolatier's Apprentice, where that was a bit of a different project. I was hired by the publisher with that one. Sorry, I misspoke. I was hired by the publisher for that one and matched with the author. So that is a more traditional case. I guess where I was thinking about that is that was a book that was published for not-for-profit. So
oh, okay.
In that case, I didn't get royalties. I was giving a flat fee contract at the front end.
Got it.
So I guess that's where I was going. There's some, that's a bit of an unusual situation. But I think publishing has obviously expanded. There's a lot of self-publishers. There's different styles of publishing. There's so many publishing houses. I think there's, if I can call it the old days, there used to be a more one way of doing things, which was the publisher would hire the illustrator and match them with the author. And I've certainly had some different experiences. I've had all sorts of different contracts throughout my career, so it's really quite open.
Right. Now, what's the commitment for a print run in doing a children's book? My understanding is that most color books end up being sent offshore, and then you're talking thousands of copies. Is that the case,
That's
really?
True.
Okay.
That's correct. I've illustrated a couple of picture books in the last couple of years. One was called I'll Follow the Moon, and the other was called Gwyn, Fair, and Shining, and they were both printed offshore, that's correct, in Asia, shipped back here. Those were both your standard picture book size and length,
uh-huh.
And I think they each had a print run of about 5,000.
Okay, that's a pretty healthy start.
Yeah, that's pretty average. A lot of books coming from smaller presses or from first-time authors, it's not uncommon for a print run between 2,000 and 4,000.
Right. Now, as the illustrator, do you take charge of making sure that the reproduction matches your design intent, or who has that responsibility?
That's generally the publisher. The publisher generally has an in-house design department.
Okay.
Generally, what I do is I hand over the illustrations to the publisher.
Okay.
They would take those, and they would, it's important to realize that an illustrator doesn't necessarily control the design of a book, and a design is a very separate element, and that is the layout of the typography and how the artwork appears on the page and whatnot. Now, it is obviously very crucial that an illustrator understands what the publisher wants in terms of the design, because otherwise you're illustrating in a void.
Right.
So to put it really simplistically, the publisher has to tell me how big to make the artwork. I need to know the dimensions and the specifications of the book. I need to know what words go on which page so I know how much space to leave. All these problems or issues that you have to account for as an illustrator. But at the end of the day, when I'm finished my work, that goes to the publishing house and their in-house designers, and they would combine the words, the artwork, and put it all into the nice, neat package that you see on the bookshelf, which is the book with its cover and all its interior artwork.
Right. I was thinking... I know we talk about design in terms of book design, but I guess I was thinking of, like the color palette and so on.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, that's certainly, an art director at a publishing house would have that conversation with the illustrator.
Uh-huh.
So using my experience from the Chocolatier's Apprentice, we had quite a few meetings before I began work discussing what our vision for the book would be and the actual color palette. We, you know, it's a book about chocolate, so were we going to use lots of browns? Were we going to use, you know, brown can be, obviously chocolate's brown, but at the same time, brown can be a muddy color, so we didn't want it to be too moody, the book, so what colors were we going to gravitate towards? We ended up gravitating towards a lot of candy sort of colors, like pink and purple and yellow.
Oh, okay.
To lighten it up, because we didn't want to get too murky. And we also had numerous discussions about character design. So we actually did this whole phase of character design of the main character and some of the two or three of the other minor, you know, lesser important characters. And we kind of went through this whole process where before I even began illustrating proper pictures for the book, we were just designing the character.
Lee, is there a particular trend in children's literature and illustrations?
You know, I can only give you my opinion on that matter, what I kind of see in my experience. I love picture books. The great thing about picture books, I think, is, you know, generally the artistic quality of them is so high, and you're seeing wonderful picture books coming out. I think the picture book industry is quite strong. Obviously, picture books are more expensive to produce because they're in full color and because they're so art-intensive. I think the other side of that coin is, I think, chapter books, books for older kids, are less illustrated than they used to. So if you look at a book from 100 years ago, and I always think of the Wizard of Oz books because the Oz books were the books that really influenced me, not only as an artist, but they were the books that I just loved as a kid, very heavily illustrated with hundreds of illustrations, pen and ink illustrations. Another example would be Alice in Wonderland, things like that, heavily illustrated. But nowadays, you see so many chapter books that have either no illustrations or very, very few illustrations. And I tend to illustrate my chapter books quite a bit, and I get a lot of feedback based on that. And some people love that, and other people are like, oh, I like to use my own imagination, and we don't like our kids to read books with pictures because they're too old to read books with pictures. So, and I always find that rather funny because, of course, generally when someone says that to me, their kid's standing behind them with a comic book in their hand. So it's these are just different ideas, I guess, that are kind of going around. On one hand, we have this idea that chapter books should be less illustrated, but at the same time, we have the emergence of the graphic novel, which obviously it's a picture book for older people. And we have graphic novels that are being written for adults, let alone kids. So I don't know if these are trends per se, but they're certainly different market forces. They're different pulls in the market. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, as someone who's creating stories or creating a book, I think you just have to do what you feel is right for your project, and it's going to find an audience.
Lee, I've got in my hand here your Kendra Kendall Star in The Door to Unger, your October 2007 publication. We've got the galley that your publisher has sent us to review.
Oh, that's very exciting. I haven't even seen it. So
you haven't?
I got it. I don't have a galley that I can drop on my foot, put it that way. I've seen the, in this electronic age, I've seen the electronic file.
Oh,
that's very exciting.
It is exciting, and, you know, as I'm flipping through here, you actually do have a lot of illustrations, and this is very unusual for this age group as compared to other books that we receive for review, and I'm really actually quite enjoying looking at these characters, and so as an illustrator, I mean, obviously you just have to be totally into imagination to be able to create these characters with these expressions, and there is a lot of detail. You know, you had mentioned earlier that your illustrations are simple. They are, but they are extremely detailed.
And we'll be back with more Authors Access after these important announcements.
After successfully completing the challenging process of publishing a book, many authors find themselves arriving at a new and even more challenging step in their writing career, and that is attracting an audience and gaining publicity for their newly published work. ReaderViews.com offers valuable resources for this important step in an author's career, and they now provide the latest marketing tool, the book preview. These are videos created to promote books in the same way that movie trailers promote movies, and they are amazing. Go to ReaderViews.com today to find out more about previews. Just click on the previews icon in the menu bar for more information.
This week on AuthorsAirwaves.com, we'll be featuring Marion Volkman, author of Life Skills, Improve the Quality of Your Life with Metapsychology. More information on Marion's book at www.lifeskillsbook.com. Find out whether you can create happiness in your life or whether it's all up to chance. What is happiness anyway, and why does it matter? Join us on AuthorsAirwaves.com this week. Music is arranged and performed by George Wood. For more information, see PodSafeAudio.com. And now back to our interview on AuthorsAccess.com, where authors get published and published authors get successful.
And so back to my question, how do you come up with these characters?
That is a good question. It depends, you know. Certainly with the first book in that series, The Box of Whispers, it did begin with one painting, and some of the ideas that were originally in that painting have survived. A lot of them morphed and evolved and changed, as ideas tend to do. You know, I always say this, I draw my way out of writer's block. And with The Door to Under, the book that you have in your hot little hands there, there was a new character introduced who wasn't in the first book, and I was having trouble writing him. I was stuck, and I couldn't quite get this character out of my coconut and onto the paper. And I remembered what I should do, because this is my little rule. When I get stuck, I should draw. So I just started drawing this character, and as he came to life as a picture, I could suddenly hear his voice in my head. His personality jumped off the page to me, and I could write him so easily. And this is just seems to be something that really works for me. And I don't really know if I'm answering your question, but there's this bit of synergy between the writing and the artwork for me, and that's how I really bring my characters to life. I find it really hard to write about a character unless I draw that character. You can see the picture of that character sitting in front of me.
So I can see this. Well, you've written the story, actually, yourself, too, and so you're very involved in the story itself, and so the characters can come to life. And I'm wondering how, let's say, if I have written a children's book and I am talking to you, the illustrator, how do I get across to you what it is that I really want to be illustrated?
Well, the best way to do that, I'm speaking for myself, but I think all illustrators love this, is just to have a very good mock-up or a very good storyboard. And sometimes publishers provide this. I've also worked on a couple of projects where the authors have provided the mock-up or the storyboard. And this is just basically their vision of the book, and sometimes they just draw little stick figures and everything. But it's their vision of what they should see happening in terms of action or in terms of expression on each and every page. Now, that's very helpful for me because that tells me what the author has in mind. It doesn't mean that as I work on this project for months and months and months and get to really involve, you know, I get really involved in the project, I might come up with an idea which I think would work better in terms of a composition. But it's hard to get to that point unless I know what the author has in mind first. And, of course, the other thing that I would want to hear from the author or the publisher is, you know, we talked about color palette, but, also in terms of character, what do you think this character should look like? You know, is it, if you're drawing a child, is it a child that's tall? Is it shorter? What type of hair? The more ideas that are given to me, the more detail is given to me, the better job I can do. I do find there's a certain evolution. I don't think I've ever illustrated anything in the sense that it turned out exactly, you know, the end product matched equally what the original vision was, but that's just part of the artistic process. And hopefully we're always just making it better, and that's just a part of the whole process of bringing the book from start to finish.
Into a life, really, isn't it?
I just read this, can't remember who said it, but I just read this quote the other day. It said, writing a book is the closest a male will ever come to birth. I thought, that's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, we often talk about books being birthed. So earlier, Lee, you had mentioned something about that parents sometimes don't want children to read illustrated books, especially as they get older. And I would assume the older is like the readers 10, 11, 12. Is that it? And why is it that parents all of a sudden don't want these kids to be reading illustrated books?
Well, I wish I knew. I mean, sometimes this comes from the educational system. I live in Canada, in Vancouver, Canada, but I mean, you know, we're very similar to the States in terms of a lot of the movements and ideas that are flowing through the educational system. But, you know, I'm not much of a rule person. I don't really like rules. So when I hear things like that, I shudder almost at the fact that someone's placing that restriction on something. You know, I mean, I've also had kids come up to me and say, oh, I'm not allowed to read that book because my teacher told me it's too advanced for me. And I always think, well, were you reading that book? I mean, because if you're enjoying it and you have no problem understanding it and the emotional content isn't above you, then you should read it. What's the problem? And I think that's, you know, I just think sometimes people come up with these ideas that are very general and they just want to apply them generally. And I think that's always a dangerous thing. You should, you know, when I was a kid, I read everything I could get my hands on. I never really paid attention to what the age level was. But I think that's just part of the industry. In the book industry, we like to know, we like to put things in their own little slots. It's for this age group. It's intended for this specific audience. This is a book for girls. This is a book for boys. It's for 8-year-olds. It's for 10-year-olds. Which is fine, but I think it's dangerous to just submit yourself wholly to those little rules and to those prescriptions, because I think then you can miss out on a lot of great stuff.
Definitely. I agree. Far too much thinking goes into pigeonholing people these days.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, my Kendra Candlestar books, obviously Kendra Candlestar is a girl. She's the main character.
Uh-huh.
I get a lot of boys asking me, why did you create a story with a girl as the main character? And she's, you know, tying this into the illustration aspect of this conversation, she's obviously the most illustrated character in the book. She's everywhere.
Right.
But you know what? After boys read my books, I mean, I get as many emails and letters from boys as I do girls.
Wow.
They love this book because of the monsters and the, you know, there's other characters, obviously, that aren't girls. But it hasn't, you know, it hasn't really, it may have chased people away from reading the book. It may have chased boys away from reading the book. But once they have read it, it hasn't affected their love of it at all. So I just think sometimes, you know, you go into a bookstore, especially if you go into a bigger store, maybe, you know, people just say, oh, well, you need a book for girls or you need a book for boys.
Right.
I never thought like that when I was a kid. I read everything.
Yeah.
You know, that never occurred to me. And to be honest, it never occurred to me as an author until I was actually getting published and those questions were presented to me.
Wow. Tell us how this Dream Workshop got started and about your involvement and how the kids get their work through the system.
Well, Dream Workshop is a creative writing program for kids based in Vancouver, Canada, where I live. I started it about 3 or 4 years ago with another fellow. And, you know, I have my own website, obviously, and through my website I get all kinds of emails. And one day I got this very strange email from this person who wanted to start this writing program, and would I meet him for coffee or was I interested? And I thought, no. I get all these, so many weird emails through my website sometimes, as you can imagine, and I just thought,
yeah.
Well, this is one of the millions, right? But I don't know, for some reason, I did meet him, and he was very passionate, and I suddenly thought this could be something really great. And so, kind of on a wing and a prayer, I developed a curriculum when we just started doing this thing. Lo and behold, we're going into our fourth year, and we're pretty successful. Last year, we ran 100 kids through our program.
Wow.
And yeah, so the year before we'd done 80, so we almost doubled, and this year we've had to hire other teachers other than myself, and it's really great. So it's really, obviously we've touched something in the community that we've struck a nerve, that there's really been an appetite for this. And what it is, it's quite a lengthy program. This is, each class is 3 hours, and we teach between 15 and 17 classes per term.
Uh-huh.
And it's a process. We take these kids from day one writing stories all the way up to actually producing their own books, and we desktop publish their own books. And they do everything from the writing to illustrating the front cover to illustrating the inside if they so wish. A lot of them draw maps, you know, especially these great fantasy writers, they draw maps of these
books. Oh, yeah.
Created. We get them to write the text for the back cover, you know, like, what do you want to call that, like the teaser text or whatever.
Sure.
The thing that will help, we tell them, you know, how are you going to make people want to buy your book or read your book? And I think that, you know, in my opinion, that's some of the funnest, you know, that's where they have the most fun, is coming up with those little sale pitches to put on the back of their books. And a lot of them are quite hilarious. And they write their own biographies and everything. So it's not just about writing stories, because when I was a kid, I wrote books all the time. I wrote my first book when I was about 6. And I was very clear about that when I was a kid. I didn't write stories. I wrote books. And I wrote, you know, I did covers. I did copyright pages. I did all those things, even when I was 9, 10, 11 years old.
Wow.
So I wanted this program to be very much about publishing a book, not just writing the stories. Because, you know, in the publishing world, as a real author, you don't always get a say in what a book looks like or who illustrates it or how the cover looks. But I still think you should be educated enough in the business to be able to offer your insight and to stand up for what you think your book should look like in terms of presentation. And that's why we really try to teach the kids as well to really think like that and to really, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at book covers and what makes a good book cover and what will sell a book cover. And, you know, we come up with absolutely amazing book covers from these kids, and some of them are 8 years old. So I think it's really, we really emphasize that visual aspect of publishing a book. It's not just about the writing.
Right. This is just an idle question, but have you thought about packaging up, you know, the Dream Workshop to be like a kit that could be deployed by teachers in other places?
Well, my partner, who is the co-founder of this program, I think he has a plan to conquer the world eventually. But, you know, we our mandate is that, I guess we thought about that a little bit, but really our mandate, what is special about this program and what makes it, is that the kids are taught by people who work in the field.
Yeah, so, well, it's hard to duplicate.
Yeah, but it's a tricky one because not all good authors make good teachers.
Yeah.
It's a very special combination of a person. I love it, and we've had some success, and we've got a couple other authors now who are involved in our program and who are teaching, and we have a couple of, we have a very good children's performer. She's not an author, but she performs in schools, and she is a creative writer, but she's just not published yet. So she's one of our teachers as well, and she does a good job. So we try to have teachers who are working in the field, and that means a lot to the kids because they're getting taught by someone who knows what they're talking about. They know the process, and there's a certain amount of, you know, respect you can leverage out of that and really help these kids. And it's a really big thrill. I mean, it's a big thrill for me to see them get their books published, let alone for them. So it's really quite exciting. But we have been taking this program on the road, so to speak. We just got back from Seoul, Korea, actually. We did a creative camp there for a week. So that was pretty exciting. My co-founder is of Korean descent, so we ended up going to Seoul for 11 days, and we had a workshop there, which was really successful. So we'll probably be going back, and we may indeed be going to some other countries as well. So that the future of Dream Workshop looks really bright, so it's really quite exciting.
Yeah, I'm just curious of the mechanics. You say you use desktop publishing, so do you actually produce a PDF file and then go to a saddle stitch binding?
We don't do saddle stitch just because technically for a saddle stitch, the book has to be a certain length, and we have some authors that give Tolstoy a run for his money. They're writing books that are 200 pages long, right?
Oh, okay.
So we usually just do Surlock binding or coil binding, thing of the sort. We have done perfect binding for cases where we've done some anthologies. So obviously it's not economical to print 5 copies of one book, perfect bound.
Right.
But if we're printing 200 or 300 copies of an anthology, which includes work by several different young authors, then we've actually done that. So we've actually done a perfect bound book as well.
Wow,
so it just
really
depends
great.
On what, you know, it's just economics as well. At the end of the day, these are kids. But, you know, I always think when I was a kid, and I tell this to my students, and it's hard for them to imagine a time before computers.
Yeah.
And certainly, I didn't have a computer when I was a kid. My books were all handwritten in Hilroy notebooks, and I would paste construction paper covers on them, and they just look horrible. The production value, the illustrations are pretty good, and the writing's not too bad for a 10-year-old, but the production value, I guess, you know, is, in my mind, horrible. So when I see these fantastic books printed out, you know, on a laser printer and bound together with the proper wired coil, I think they look really great.
Yeah, cool. Let's hear a little bit about this Goblin Design 101. That sounds intriguing.
Yes, this is a funny thing. I do a lot of school visits, and when I first started doing school visits, I used to go in and do the usual and talk about writing and whatnot. But as an illustrator, I realized I kind of have an extra arrow in my quiver. And I was just in a school visit one day, and on a whim, I said, well, let's do a drawing exercise. Let's design our own goblin. And the kids were like, yeah, that's great. So I got out the paper, and I just, you know, I got them to give me the suggestion, and I would draw what they told me to draw. And, of course, what happened is this creature would evolve on the paper, and we'd end up with this very unique creature. So that was the very first introduction of Goblin Designing 101, as they came to call it. And now the exercise evolved even further because now what I do is I go into schools and I still draw a creature. It may not be a goblin, but a creature based on what the kids ask me to draw, but I get them to draw along with me. So some kids some kids draw exactly what I draw, but I encourage them to, you know, go off on their own tangents. So some kids, you know, they don't want to draw exactly what I'm drawing, so they'll draw something different. And that's really incredible, I find, because at the end, you know, I may be doing this for a group of 200 kids sometimes, and they all hold up their paper, 200 wonderful characters. And then what I do is I ask them to write a story based on that character, which, based on my experience of writing an entire book based on one painting, I find artwork is such a great tool for nurturing inspiration and serving as a spark for storytelling. So then the kids can do this. And I do this exercise even with kids in kindergarten and grade one. So they may not have they're not at the stage yet where they can write, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But even a kindergarten kid can draw a picture and then get up and tell a story verbally based on that picture. And
right.
We've done that as well, and that is really great. And, you know, it's incredible to see a kid spew out this wonderful story about a drawing they created 5 minutes ago. Very incredible.
Wow, you really have some programs going for the kids, Lee. This is great. And what a way to get them started at a young age and just work them into being able to do illustrations. I really commend you on that.
Oh, thank you.
So,
well, I have the dream job, I tell you that. It's a marvelous job to be able to go into a school and draw comics with kids.
Oh, no kidding. And talk about fun. Kids are just so much fun. So we need to be closing here, Lee. It's just been a really delight talking to you, and I just have to ask you one bottom line question, and that is, what is the most important factor of an illustration that really sells this book?
That sells this book
Yeah. What is the most important factor of an illustration that, or illustrations that really sell the book?
Going back to what we said earlier, I think the artwork has to speak to the words and match the words. You know, if you are having a very whimsical, fantastical subject, then I'm not sure dramatic, realistic art is the perfect match. So I think there's this certain integrity with the artwork that has to be there, regardless of the style. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to have a certain trueness, a certain presence with the artwork. And if that is there, then it speaks to the audience.
You know, I have to agree. The artwork has to speak to the reader, basically. And we're talking about kids. And I just am reflecting back on some of the books that we reviewed. We have kids review kids' books, and that is it. And, you know, they make comments about the illustrations. They're either good or else sometimes they're just not very good, and they do not reflect the story. They just are some drawing that is just there. And so I think when you put it together, it's just really important that the illustration really does have to reflect the story.
I think you can really tell whether an illustrator has loved working on a project based on how, you know, I think sometimes illustrations just seem to lack a certain bit of, well, I keep using the word magic, but I like that word. I think, you know, I always love looking at these old classic books that have been illustrated numerous times for different artists, and I almost feel like you can tell who really loved working on that project versus who didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I find that's really neat.
Well, gosh, it certainly you can tell by looking, I'm flipping again through your book that's coming out in October, Kendra Candlestar and the Door to Unger, and you certainly, you know, you've captured so many neat illustrations in here, and I just encourage readers to, or listeners to this program to check out your book, or any of your books, because I know the illustrations in the other book are great, too. So, and Lee, tell us your website address again, please.
My website is www.leefodi.com. That's LEEFODI.
Thank you again, and it's just been a real pleasure.
You can go there and check out a free preview of the new book, Kendra Candlestar and the Door to Unger, plus get a peek inside the first book, Kendra Candlestar and the Box of Whispers.
Oh, yes, and, you know, going to your website, that's a really neat experience because it's a fun website. It's fun. You can really tell that you're artistic and you have fun being on that website. And if I recall, there's even a picture of you with the silly hat on. It's just really neat.
That's my Wizard of Words hat.
That's it.
I have this Wizard's hat now with these words, Magic, Monster, and Mystery on it, because I'm the Wizard of Words, nicknames that my students come up for me. Now I was once the Wizard of Words, and then I was Mr. Wiz, and now I'm either Mr. Wiz or Mr. Evil Wiz, because you know, teaching creative writing to kids means I'm a publisher. So you know how writers like to talk about their publishers. Kids are they're evil. So I'm now this evil whiz because I give them deadlines and things like that.
You've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We'll be back on the air August 30th, 2007, when our topic will be How to Get Noticed by an Agent or Publisher. And our guest who will be joining us is Greg Daniel from DanielLiteraryGroup.com. You can learn more about all our guests on the Authors Access website, which is AuthorsAccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson in Austin, Texas, signing off.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.